Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, welcome everyone. Page 1152. We are learning in memory of
Betzalel ben David Aryeh. Today is his yahrzeit.
Betzalel ben David Aryeh, blessed memory. We'll be, it comes from the same name. The word Betzalel is the same word as Tselem, Tselem Elohim, in the image of God. So Betzalel means like in the image of the Almighty. Betzalkel.
He was the artist because he did.
He's the one who created
not
the.
Not that he did images, but
architect.
Yeah.
He was not an artist. He was an artisan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was a worker, and he took.
Right.
Moshe gave him the commands of what
and
to do, and,
how to,
and he built it according to that. But he was a simple artisan who took this idea and made something very beautiful and very grand of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he was very young. He was self-taught. Mm-hmm. In other words, Hashem like gave him the inspiration.
Well, if you're going to learn from a teacher, don't get much better than that.
That's right. Okay. Well. Welcome, everyone. This Haftorah on page 1152 is fascinating. The Torah reading itself is what's known as a Shira. Parshas Beshalach is Shabbos Shira, the Shabbos of the song. And this Haftorah is also a song. But the question is, what's the connection between one song and another? A song doesn't just mean a song. There are many things you could say. It's a special kind of song. It's a song of divine inspiration. And usually it's that people were threatened and they were under a very scary enemy. And then miraculously they're defeated. And so when a person feels like they were facing life and death, and now they've come out of it, so their soul just breaks out into a song. They just want to be so thankful to be alive and so happy and thankful to Hashem. And so this joy that a person experiences, that's the similarity. In other words, just like at the sea. Until then, even though they were free, the Egyptians were their masters. And when they came back, they thought they'd all have to go back to slavery. And it wasn't until the sea, when the water went back on the chariots of the Egyptians, not only did they realize that they would be really free, but until then, the Egyptians who had whipped them and beat them and were so cruel to them hadn't really been punished. Now they got to see those very same Egyptians that had brutalized them were all going down quickly. And so they burst into a song in recognition that Hashem is the one who saves. And there's a similar message to this song over here. What's interesting is that we know at the Song of the Sea that women were very heavily involved, meaning that it's mentioned a song can be sung by a man or it could be sung by a woman. There's really no difference. But there's big mention of Miriam, that she brought the tambourines. She thought, you can't sing a song very well without some music, right? But this is a song of Devorah. But there's an idea that there's a certain joy that can be expressed by women, a certain optimism or a certain that comes more natural to women than men. I mean, men sing a shira also, but there's a certain... is a certain element that a person finds in their soul to sing this song of happiness. And so it's just interesting that the author of this would be Devorah. Devorah was an amazing person. In a society where, I guess it was run by men, so to speak, or that was led by men, she is the judge and she is the general, so to speak. She's the one that wins it all. Very interesting how this comes across. So let's begin. Devorah. Now, who was this lady Devorah? Isha Nevia. She was a woman who was a prophetess. Now, a prophetess means that she was close to God. God spoke to her. God doesn't just speak to people out of the blue. They have to work on it. They have to try to be very pious and holy and do the right things. And at that time, there was a certain type of study where they would study for years and pray certain prayers to hope that God would speak to them, would speak through them. And so she achieved that. And again, there were men and there were women, the prophets and prophetesses. Then it mentions something, Aishas Lapidus. So some people just say her husband's name was Lapidus. And there are people today who have that as a last name in their family, Lapidus. I used to know somebody Lapidus. That was just like a family last name. So her husband's name was Lapidus. But the word Lapid also means a flame. And that's where we get to what the art scroll decided to translate. She was a fiery woman. what it means in this sense is she knew how to light a fire under people. And that's a very important skill. There are, a lot of times things need to get done, and there you just have to know how to light the fire. You need to know how to get people to take action. And she was somebody who was capable of that. There's another tradition that that she used to take the old clothing and turn it into wicks, and she would bring them to the temple, because the temple was the place where people would get close to Hashem. And so this word lapid is they used to use this for torches, for the wicks that she would donate. And that was where it got the name. So, but in the merit of her wanting to give to the temple and to have lots of light and to do that, so Hashem spoke with her. And not only that, he shuffed as Yisrael Beis. She was the leader. She was the judge. There's a discussion about this, how exactly it worked. Obviously, she must have been very knowledgeable and very learned if she was able to be a judge. If Hashem spoke to her, that must be something that was available to her. It mentions, interesting, where she set up her, where was her space, so to speak. So it says, he Yoshev is tachas tomer devora. She had a palm tree that she would sit under. So why does it mention that? I mean, that's very nice. It's very cute. Like she liked outdoors or the. So the Medrash says that women avoid being alone with men, and men avoid being alone with women. Usually in a legal setting, if you were to go speak privately to a judge, you could be alone with them, there'd be a man there or a woman there. And so in order to avoid that, she had her place where she judged was underneath a tree out in the public. There's an idea that today, that sometimes a person is alone with a man or woman, they leave the door open or unlocked or in front of a window where they, because we avoid being alone with somebody if we don't have to be, therefore, that's why it mentions over here that's where she set up court, underneath the date palm. And where was this? Bein Harama, Bein Beis El, Bahar Ephraim. It was in the territory of Ephraim. B'yau Oleh B'nei Yisrael L'Mishpat. And they came to her for justice. They had, basically, she was a personality of was such that they accepted what she said. You see today, like, there's a big fight because, Trump says the so-called judge. I don't know if you know or that. Yeah, you can, but it's not easy to be a judge that people listen to, even in a country where you got to listen to the judges, But Devorah, you had no choice. You better listen to her because she, when a person has the moral authority, when they speak from Hashem and they speak with sincerity, you just got to accept what she says, whether you like it or not. That's really was the amazing thing, and that was quite a something for her to do and become. The fact that everybody came to her, it says the Bnei Yisrael came to her for justice. So during this time, we were the nations around us would terrorize us. Things in the Middle East haven't changed in many, many centuries. And at certain times, the nations would have free rein to come in and take away money and brutalize the people. The only thing that would scare them away, so to speak, was from time to time if we had a military or they saw that they couldn't just come and do what they pleased. The way that the history of it was that when the Jewish people tended to worship idols, then Hashem wouldn't protect us. And then our enemies would be in control. This is really predicted with Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov got the brocha, and Yitzhak tells him, well, as long as you do what you're supposed to, then you'll be on top of your brother. But the minute you slide, then he'll be on top of you. And that was the history of Israel at that time. And so for many years, the Jewish people were used to their neighbors coming in and terrorizing them and harming them and taking away their money and their fields and their security. And She felt now was time to, the people davened and Hashem heard their tefillos, that's always the question, when we're ready for salvation. You know, even in Egypt, some people felt that the Egyptians would be successful. How did they know that we would be worthy of defeating them? Some people wanted to give up and go back to Egypt. But she said, "Vatishlach v'tikra," she went and she sent for someone. So she sends for a person named Baruch ben Avinoam Mikedesh Naphtali. That's where he was from. Who is this person? Anybody want to guess who this fellow Baruch ben Avinoam is? So some people say it was her husband.
Yeah. Oh. So why would she have to summon him?
Oh, that's a good question. They're never around when you need them, right?
That's true.
Some people say that since she was so busy running the country, it's like, you know, Mrs. Trump is busy, you know, she's in a different place. Like, they both, she's raising the kids. What's Trump's son's name? Barron Trump, yeah. Right. So she's busy raising Barron, so she can't be there, you know, having all the tea parties in the White House, right? So here also, she was busy doing judgment, and so she was... he was busy doing, you know, making a living or doing whatever he needed to do. And so she had to send for him. Other people learned that this was not her husband. This was just a prominent person. You know, she being the leader of the people would know who to send for her. The interesting thing is this word Barak, anybody that's related to Lepidus, by the way, fire. The Barak is like a lightning or a fire. It's the same who was the... There was another prime minister that was Barak, right?
Ehud
Barak, right,
before
that's right.
Jail,
that's right. So,
very fiery.
Yeah, that's right. We got a lot of history here. So she sent for him.
Very greedy.
And she tells him, guess what? I got prophecy, and now's the time. And she says, I want you to go and raise an army. Halo siva Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Hashem has commanded us. Leku meshachta bar tavor. Go. And get a group of people together on Mount Tabor. You need at least 10,000 men, and you can get them from the tribe of Naphtali b'nei Zvulun. Those are the tribes where you'll get your volunteers from. And when you go there, guess what's going to happen? The Gentiles are going to hear about it, and they are going to send an army to defeat you. U'meshachta elecha el nachal Kishon, and I will draw to you to the Kishon River, Sisro Sartzeva, there was a very scary general who until that point had been undefeated. His name was Sisra. And he was for Yavin, who was one of the Canaanites. And he's going to come, Vesrikvo, and he had very strong weapons. In those days, the greatest weapon was a chariot. If you had chariots and you could, it was a tool of war. It was to, just like in the battle in the Torah with the Egyptians, if you had the chariots, you would just run over the people. I've never seen one in action. I don't know what it... Apparently they could trample people and they could go with their swords and, you know, in and out. But in ancient times, that was the equivalent of a battle tank,
well,
you know.
You had the horses, which gave you the speed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you could just run over entire populations.
Or like a cavalry or something like that. So she tells him that you're going to get your army together, but guess what's going to happen? The Canaanites are going to hear about it, and they're going to send their main general, Sisra, together with his chariots, Ve'es Hamona, together with multitudes of people. But don't worry, it's not to be a decha. They'll be given in your hands. So somebody would tell you that, you know, you should go there and you'll have a battle, and you're going to face an enemy that's stronger than you, and the enemy has better weapons than you. You wouldn't be that excited about going into that battle, you know, with the enemy. And then you're told that the one leading the battle has never been defeated. This is Sisra. So, let's see what he says. Verse 8, he really doesn't want to go. So he says the following, Im telchi imi v'halachti, if you come with me, then we can do it. You get an idea what a spirit she was. When she was with people, they had faith. That's something a person can do. He or she can give other people the faith to do it. So if you go with me, then I'll do it. But if you don't go with me, no way. If you don't come, I won't come. It's difficult if somebody gives you a message to convey to other people what to do. He felt that the only way they would be able to do it would be if they take her with her. She was a holy person. And then if she was there, then the men would fight. But if it was just him, he didn't have the faith. He didn't have the courage to go it alone. Verse 10. So she says, I'll go with you. But you blew it. But you won't get the reward. You know, it won't be your... Because if I tell you Hashem commands you to go and do it, so don't worry. What is this? I'll go if you will go. Well, Hashem said go. So kibiyat isha yimkar Hashem esistro, because the glory of the battle of defeating the enemy will go to the hands of a woman. Who is the woman? So most people assume that she meant herself. So either she meant herself, or we're going to see later the woman who actually ends up defeating Sisro. But she gets up and she goes with Baruch to Kadesh. So verse 10, Vizek Baruch has Vulan Ves Naphtali Kadesh. So he gets the army together from those two tribes. V'yal Baraglov. Now it mentions over here, specifically, they didn't have any horses. They went by foot. And when the enemy has horses and chariots and you're by foot, that doesn't look so good. that's not a fair battle. But the Yal Baraglov, Serasafa Ish, and the 10,000 men, Metal Imo Dvora. Dvora went with them. Now, it mentions another fact over here, which we're going to see in a moment the significance of. The Hever HaKeni, there was another, there were different nomadic tribes that, in the Middle East, they've always had these nomadic tribes. It's interesting, today they think the Bedouin, or the Druze, might be descendants of these families. Because the Middle East still has the same nomadic tribes. The names change, but some of the tribes that did not worship idols were descended from Yisro. That was Moshe's father-in-law. Those were the nomadic tribes, and they were driven away from the people originally because the people worshipped, the other nations worshipped idols, and so they lived like the life of a nomad. They pitched their tent for a while over here, a while over there, and they went from one place to another. So there was a group of them called Hever HaKeni. He was from the Keni. That was one of the nations of that time. And he was separate, Mikayim b'mnei Chovei Chosein Moshe, and he was from Moshe's father-in-law. Excuse me. Thank you. V'yet o'elo ad ilon. Thank you. He pitched, their tent was pitched. It's interesting. There were peoples that weren't, they weren't Gentiles, but they weren't Jews either. They were like a separate nomadic tribe that lived over there in a place called Sananim, Asher es Kedni and Kedesh. And we'll find out in a second why that's significant. In other words, you had the Jewish people and you had the Canaanites, and then you had this nomadic tribe called the that were the from Yisro's family. Yeah.
And they gave Yisro a different name.
Yeah, Yisro had lots of names.
Like seven names or something?
Yeah. Basically, he was one of these people that was always doing something different. You know? And there are people like that. Every time you meet him, but he actually tried every religion and every, in the end, he came to belief in Hashem. He was in Egypt, Yisro, and then he was in Midian. But you're right, here it calls him the Keni. That was another name for Yisro. But Yigidu l'sisru ki ola Baruch ben Avin, that someone told them that the Jew Baruch went up to the mountain and Har Tabor. But Yizak Yisisru as Kol Rikvo, and so he gets all of his chariots. Tesha Meos Rechov Barzel, 900 chariots, and these weren't any chariots; these were iron chariots. Yeah, that's in ancient times that was very
like tanks,
right? Mm-hmm. That's right. Now, in addition to that, there's Kol Am Asher Ito Mechoreshes Agoyim El Nacho Kishon. And all the nations, you know, when people attack Jews, they all want to join in. I don't know if you study like the Israeli wars, they were like United Nations, you know, all the Muslims would send troops, Iraq and Lebanon and other groups would join in to go fight the Jews. It was always like that. So here also, he was going to fight the Jews. These other nations came in. So they're facing this mighty general. And they're on top of the mountain, 14. V'toma dvara Barak. So she tells Barak, "Kum, get up." It's interesting. Like, you know, get up sounds like, you know, don't sit here. You know, she says, "Do something." That's right. And she says a famous word, "Kizdeh hayom asher nosen Hashem esistru." Today's the day. Today's the day. If you take advantage, Sisru will be given to your hand. Alo Hashem yotzu lefanecha. And don't think that the victory is because of you. Hashem is going to go in front of you. Vayeri Baruch Mehartar, he went down. Vasira Salafi Mishachrav and the 10,000 men after him. It's very interesting also, it says like he went first. You know, it's very dangerous to be the first man to lead the way, but that's what it says. He came down and the 10,000 people were after him. He was the leader. 15, V'yas Hashem is...
That's the Israeli way.
That's correct. That's right. That was always
the... Yeah, follow me.
The other armies would have
the generals
would be in the back, and they would be in. They'd send the soldiers out to get killed.
Yeah.
Whereas the Israeli way was again based on this was to lead the way. Yeah. Vayas Hashem is Israel, and Hashem confused them. Most wars are lost when people get confused. Battles are very confusing. Reading about the Civil War battles that they sometimes couldn't tell who was on which side and where they were going, and communication was very confusing, and it was just really like pandemonium, and nobody was sure who was winning. So what Hashem caused to happen was Sisera with his tens of thousands of soldiers got confused. Now, when you have horses, it's even worse because the animals get confused and they start making lots of noise and going in all directions. Veskola machana. And they start fighting against each other and running, and they were confused. Leficham, they were put to the sword. Lifnei Barak, Vayered Sisera, Me'al Merchava. Now, when the chariots start running into each other and you get stuck, you got to get off the chariot. Because if you have a chariot, you just can't move. There's, what do you call, gridlock. They had that in the Six-Day War. What was it? At the Mitla Pass, where the Israelis snuck behind the army and they set up on both sides and they started, and they hit the tanks and troop carriers so that all the other ones would come up behind, would just go smashing into them. And so there was this huge valley of just broken equipment and you just couldn't get anywhere. And some of the soldiers just got out of their tanks and ran in the desert, which was not the smartest thing because the desert was not such a great place to run to. But that's really what happened over here, is that these iron chariots were all entangled with each other and the horses. And so Sisera gets off his chariot and he runs. Now, one thing about it's just interesting how this was true of the Israeli wars also. You can defeat lots of the enemy, and there'll still be a chance of war because they can always replace them. They have lots of, you know, there's lots of Arabs, you know, they'll just get another army together and they'll come again. But if you defeat the generals, or you defeat the people that are capable of making war, then you'll be safe. Israel wanted to do that in the Yom Kippur War. They wanted to get rid of the Egyptian Third Army, but that they wouldn't let him do. But the Americans put a stop to it. I think the Soviets said if they go against the Third Army, they're going to drop a nuclear bomb. It was a whole thing. But if Sisera would have survived, he would have been able to raise another army, get another 900 chariots. You know, amongst the Gentiles, it's unlimited. And then we would have been in big trouble. So the challenge was to get Sisera, because as long as he was alive, he could raise other armies and the battle would go on. But he ran away. So Biyonis Barah, he ran away on foot. Ubarak Radaf Achre Harecha Vachre Hamachana. Now, Baruch was busy running after the chariots and after the camp. He was, you know, he was looking for the big targets. Ad Choreshda, going, Vipo Kol Machna Sisera, and the whole camp, the tens of thousands of people, they all fell. Lefichar Lo Nisher Ad Echad. There was nobody left. It was like a total rout. But meanwhile, 17, the Sisera Nusra Aglava Ol Yael, Eshes Chavar Akeni. Sisera ran away to the nearby neighbors, not the Jewish area, but to the Bedouin area, so to speak, to the tents, the nomadic tents. And there was a lady's tent. Some people felt that he did this because Jews wouldn't normally go into ladies' tents. There was a sense of privacy. This was like, just a bunch of ladies. There's no big generals in the ladies' tents, you know. So why did he think he'd be safe there? Ki shalom bein yav and melech chatzor ubein Hever Hakeni. He wasn't part of this war that was going on. He was. There was peace between the Kenis and the king of Yavin. So Etetziyah Likra Sisro. Now, an amazing lady comes into the picture. And it's not even clear if this lady's Jewish. She was the descendant of Yisro, which means that she believed in Hashem. That's clear. But it's very unlikely that she was Jewish, because if she was Jewish, do you think Sisro would have run into her tent hoping that she'd protect him? It's hard to imagine that, even though she was not the same tribe, you know, but still. There's a little bit of a debate about it, if she was Jewish or if she just was a believer in Hashem. But she knew that Sisro was a butcher, really. He was this general that would go and terrorize people and murder people. And she wanted to help defeat him. And it's really interesting. You can imagine the courage this would take to, if that were the average person would say, you know, I'm gonna hide. I don't want to be anywhere near this guy. You know, this guy's a butcher. But she looked at it a little differently. She said she saw what was happening, that Hashem was helping the Jewish people defeat their enemies. And this guy, if he escapes, he's bad news. So she wants to help capture him. So, but Tetzi'el Likra Sisro. And we're going to see a little bit in the song she's hinted to. But we have a tradition that she's one of the greatest ladies of all time. This act that she's willing to do to try to defeat this butcher is really something. Again, it's not conventional. I mean, how many people try to assassinate, but if somebody would have got taken out Hitler or something, or somebody would have taken, who knows how many lives they would have saved. So she goes out, and she goes to Sisro, and she says, Surina, come here, you'll be safe. Come to me, come over here. Sura, Eli, Altir, don't be afraid. So he comes to her tent, and she covers him, hide under the blanket. I don't know why you'd think he's safe under the blanket. Maybe that if they look, they won't see anything. I don't know. But that's all there was to hide. You know, go hide under the blanket. So he hides under the blanket. And he tells her, give me a little bit to drink. In battle, people get dehydrated. You know, they fight for hours and hours and hours, and so they're just ravished. And so he says, "Please get me some water. I'm very thirsty." So why doesn't she give him water? Instead, she gives him milk. In those days, he probably wanted to be on guard. If somebody would come to try to kill him, he would still fight. He would still escape. And he probably would not have planned to go to sleep. That's not a very good place to be sleeping when your enemy is coming and searching for you. She, the opposite, wanted him to go to sleep so she could give him into the hands of the Jews or to kill him. So she had a strategy, which was she would give him some milk. And the milk would, warm milk and cookies puts you to bed. You know, that's so she gave him some warm milk, and that made him fall asleep. But some people say there was wine there. She gave him the milk, and she covered him, and he had to drink, and she covered him, and as he was going to sleep, verse 20, you should stand by the tent, and if somebody comes and says, have you seen anybody? So you should tell him, I know. Just tell him, I didn't see anybody, not me. So that's what happens over here. We're going to see Devorah, who was a prophetess, knew there was more to the story. And oftentimes there is, and sometimes you can't ask, you know. Often, like, people, the amazing stories, there's sometimes a background to and things that people had to do, which is not always so pretty, what they had to do to survive. But he falls asleep, verse 21, V'tikach Yael Eshes Kaver. She didn't even have weapons with her. It's interesting. She didn't even have a sword. But she had, they were nomads, and they used to pitch their tent. And so they would have a stake that would be kind of sharp, and they had like a hammer, and they would hit the stake in the ground, and it would hold up the tent. It's a very important thing to have. And they were very skilled at hitting a hammer because you do that enough times and you know how to do it. So he's sleeping. She takes this very sharp stake and she gives him a headache. Atika El Ishus Kavir Yosid Oh Vatasim, that she takes it in her hand, Vatavle La Balat, she very quietly, you know, she didn't want him to wake up when she's about to give him some steak. And Atika Esa Yosid, and she takes the steak and she hits him in the temple, Vatitsa Oritz, and it goes and splits open his head. And he's normally he's a very strong man. He would not take that sitting down. But who neared him? He was out cold, and he expired. And so she defeated the enemy, the butcher. She was the one who helped defeat this tyrant. Vihine Barak wrote of his sister. And then meanwhile, now Barak comes, you know, and he's chasing after Sisera with Tetzia Lekret. She comes out to greet him. And Vitamar, and she says, Leif Eres Isha Shiratama. I said, I can show you the one you're looking for. It's interesting how she says it. Like, you know, she doesn't tell him. She doesn't brag. She says, I got to show you something. Veyavo Elai goes to her Vinei sister, and there he is, Nafal Meis. And in the middle of his head, he's got the tent peg, Vayosid Beriksim. And that was it for Canaan. They were humble for Bnei Yisrael. For the next 20 years, they didn't mess with us. And from that time on, they managed to keep the Canaanites at bay, so to speak, until they had completed the battle. So that's the story in a nutshell of that battle and the defeat. And it's like a two-pronged victory. One was Devorah, who had the inspiration and the message from Hashem to attack. She didn't have to go along in war, and war is not a place where a person would normally want to be, but they said in order to have faith, she should go with them. And sometimes people need that. They need somebody who will inspire them. Sometimes we have people that are the opposite. We have people that try to put a monkey wrench in things. They'll never work. I told you. Why don't you quit? You know, we all know there's those kind of people too. But you need to have people that are the inspiration, the people that keep things going. And we had a tradition that in Egypt that the men wanted to give up, that the hard labor was really too much for them. Nobody can blame someone who goes through slavery every day. After a while, we just can't take it anymore. And it was the women who kept the men going. They had a certain faith or a certain ability to be optimistic. And they would. And sometimes the men had to wake up early in the morning and go to work. They had to go to sleep on the work site. So the women would go out into the fields to the men and bring them food. And they would have fish in the water and they would give them food to eat and they would encourage them. And so therefore they were the victory really came about because of people, of men or women. But it's a person shouldn't underestimate what it means to encourage people to be the one that says, you know, we can do it, keep on going, keep on trying to, you know, Hashem will help, because we have the opposite. Again, we have people that are discouraging, and those that can be encouraging can find it in their nature you have no idea how important that is, how much difference you make in other people's lives, in your own lives, in your family's lives, just being that voice of encouragement. It's not always the one that has the sword. It's the one that gives people the courage to continue to go, and everything will be okay. Let's do it. And that's kind of the part of the message here. It's very interesting. Now we begin the song that she sang. But again, this is not a plain song. This is a prophetic song. A prophetic song means it's Hashem is going to reveal interesting things in the song. Songs also tend to be poetic, which makes them a little difficult to figure out the deeper meaning. But this is the song, Betosha Dvoro, Baruch Ben Evinom, and the two of them, they sang the following song. Verse 2. Bepar Paros Be Yisrael. When Hashem takes revenge for the Jewish people, in other words, until that time, the Canaanites were terrorists and they caused lots of trouble, so Hashem was going to save them. Bisnad Evam, it's interesting, it uses a word when the people are... want to be, the word nedava means to donate, when the people want to help others, when they have a spirit of giving. when the people have a spirit of giving, then Baruch Hu Hashem, then Hashem will bless them. In other words, Hashem will take revenge for people when they're giving people. When things are difficult, you have to be somebody that's willing to give and willing to share. Shema Malachim Azinu. And you should hear this. The other kings and the other nations, Rogzim Anochi L'Hashem, I sing a song to Hashem. Anochi Ashira, I will sing a Zamr L'Hashem L'Okei Yisrael. And Hashem was like our personal God. He stood up for us. Hashem Bitseiska Amisir Bitsadka Mistey Adam, and he describes from history where Hashem came with us from the earlier times. Rasha Gam Shemayim, and the heavens quaked. Natvu Gam Avim. She's painting a picture here of all of nature. What would make the Canaanites fear? What would confuse them? So she kind of like describes the nature helping. Sometimes like there can be lightning, there can be thunder, there can be clouds, there can be somehow the all of nature kind of help took place in this miracle. And really that's what happened with the sea also, is that nature was on our side. But Hashem ultimately runs nature. Harim Nizlu Mifnei Hashem, the mountains tremble in front of Hashem, Zeh Sinai, that refers to our Sinai, Mifnei Hashem. The ultimate merit of the Jewish people was that we accepted the Torah at Sinai. That's the time that we saw Hashem in the strongest way was at Har Sinai. We have a tradition that's what they call the revelation, where Hashem came down at Har Sinai, and that was the God of Israel. Verse 6, Bimei Shamgar ben Anat, Bimei Yael Chadlu Chorchos. What happened was, because of the terrorists, people were afraid to leave their house. Nobody would travel, because the people would travel would be massacred. Or the people would have to go in like back routes. They'd have to go, because if you went on the roads, it was dangerous. And people just, they stopped traveling, they stopped seeing each other. Until Devorah came, Shekamti Ein B'Yisrael. This is the famous Jewish mother. The greatest praise you could say about her was she was a mom. She was the mother of Israel. That's what it is. There is a tradition that she overdid it a little bit. In other words, what she was saying was true, but we try not to brag. We're going to see that she, for a few minutes, she might have lost her, she lost her tune, so to speak. Hashem was speaking to her, and then she forgets what, so to speak, like what Hashem was going to say. In verse 12, where she says, Uri, Uri, Devorah, like, wake up. What she was saying was, whoops, I see Hashem isn't giving me the rest of the song. So, like, basically what happened was, everything she was saying was fine, but some people feel that was a little bit, sometimes it's true that you saved the day, but you don't like to brag about it, you know. So some people view this verse 7 as a little bit of bragging, you know. You guys were in a lot of trouble till I came along, right? It was true, and it's quoted here because that's what it was. But again, the greatest part of it was she viewed herself as a mother of a Jewish people. I'm not just the mother of my kids. I'm the whole Jewish people are my children, and I look after them and I care for them, and they're mine. Verse 8, Yifkar Elokim Kadoshim Oz Lechem Sarim, people were choosing foreign gods and strange gods. Magin Imir of Ramak Barboim Elif Yisrael. The Jewish people, because they had worshipped these strange gods, they became weak, and Hashem wasn't with them, and they didn't have any weapons. She said you couldn't even find a shield. That's how bad it was. Verse 9, Libi Lechoki, the ones in Israel were the lawgivers, those that studied the law, the people that studied the Torah. And so she says, our hearts go out to those that study, to those that come to Monday afternoon class, right? Those are but that's always to any class, the people that keep keep on learning. That's what life's about, you know. That's where my heart, that's where her spot in her heart went to first. Lechoki Yisrael, those that, Chokik means even people that study statutes. The hardest studying is when you can't figure it out, you know, where this goes beyond our reasoning. You know, that's what statutes are. And she said again, Hamisnat Ma'am, those that donate to the people, Baruch Hashem. So now she describes Rokvei Asanos Sechoros. She says those that ride on certain kind of donkeys, apparently they had, Jews would send, the judges would ride on donkeys to the different cities. It's very important that people not just do things, but that they follow the Torah. And Samuel, Shmuel, would travel from city to city so that people that have arguments and disputes and they have shilas and they're not sure what to do would come to him, and he would be able to tell them what the Torah says. You owe money, you don't owe money, this one's right, that one's right. And this way there wouldn't be hard feelings. Then in ancient times it was very common to have a Beis Din or to have a court where people could resolve their differences and they could leave friends. Sometimes you think you're right, you think he's right, well, let's find out, and whoever's right, that's the one who'll get it. So they used to ride on these donkeys, these leaders would ride on the donkeys. Rokvei Asanos Sechoros Yoshvei Al Madin V'Holkei Al Derech Sicho. But verse 11, but they couldn't do this because the enemies were fighting and sending arrows. Abein Mishpatayim, Sham Yitnu Sidkos Hashem. And here Hashem showed his rightness, his righteousness and his kindness, and he would help us win this battle. Pizrim Yisrael, Az Yordu Lishorim Am Hashem. And then the people would be able to go to their cities. They wouldn't have to hide. And now we mentioned that she started to lose the inspiration. So she wakes it up. We use these words when we get ready for Shabbos. Sometimes we're not ready for Shabbos and we say in Lecha Dodi, like, wake up. We have to sometimes motivate ourselves. So she says, Uri, Uri, Devorah. Uri, Uri, Divrei Shir. Wake up, Devorah. In other words, if you need to be inspired, well, don't just sit there. Inspire yourself. Get yourself ready. Say the right words. Kum barak, get up barak, ushvei shavyecha, and go capture the prisoner, son of Avinoam. And he needed to have something lit up underneath him to get a move on it. It's interesting. He keeps on being told to get up. There are people that we're going to see later that there was one of the tribes, the tribe of Reuven, wasn't sure if they were going to join in this battle. You never like to join a battle that you'll lose, because then you just get massacred. So to the end, they were thinking, is this Lady Devorah, is she really going to do it? Who's going to win? Should we go? Should we not go? If we go, we'll just be killed. Or maybe we'll help with the victory. And they were hesitant. And because they were hesitant, they lost an opportunity. But she was able to light a fire, at least under Barak. She said, get up, Barak, go and do what you have to. Az Yorod Sridi Ladirim. And then this one person escaped. We're going to run out of time, but it's going to tell over the story of Sisro in a song of praise to Hashem. There's a tradition that Sisro raped Yael when he had her in the tent. That would be a danger if you brought a man like that into your tent. And she might have known that could happen, but she was willing to do what she could to try to save the Jewish people. Some people see a hint to that later on in the words that are mentioned. It doesn't. Again, it's difficult to know what the rest of the story was. One of the interesting things, we'll go all the way to the end of this story, was that Sisro's mother was waiting for him to come back to the battle. Which is also fascinating. Like, you don't think of that, that's in verse 28, that Sisro's mother was, he would go out to battle, and then the mothers always worry about their children when they go out to war. That's a terrible worry, war. And she was looking for him. She was looking out the window, waiting for him to come back with his troops. And he hadn't come back. And so she starts crying. When someone doesn't come back from war, the battle was over. Where was her son? So she starts crying. She starts crying and she says, what's taking so long? Where are all those chariots? Where are all the chariots? Chariots go pretty fast. What could be holding them back? They were told that this battle was a slam dunk. Verse 29. So she was Sisro was the great general, and he had many advisors and many servants, and so they advised her. They said, "Don't worry." And they said, you know what, if he's taking a long time, you know, maybe there's a lot of booty. And it takes time to, maybe they're so successful, it takes a long time. But it says it in a worse way, actually, in verse 30. Halo yimsuch yichalek shalat, there's a lot of booty, and then he says, rechma rechma sayim. He's busy with a virgin or two, meaning that he's this butcher is harming people. And he's just so busy, that's why he hasn't come home on time. Now, she was his mother, she still, you would have thought that, you know, such a son, you wouldn't be that happy with it. This is, you know, he's busy killing people and...
But he was good to his mother.
He was good to his mother, right, right, that's right. That's the old Italian, you know, was that the mafia was good to their mother, right? That's what they used to say. What's interesting is that the word used here for her cries is the word where the Gemara learns out that a shofar blow is a cry. It uses the same word. When it talks about a shofar blow, it uses the word, that same word that's used here for her tears. It's the word that says, in verse 28, where it says, "Vitis yavev," where it says she cried. So that word, yevav, is the same word used to describe the blow of a shofar. And so Gemara says, well, if you studied shoftim, you would know that a yevav is a cry. And so that's how we know that one of the main ideas with a shofar blow, it's a form of crying in front of Hashem. Mm-hmm. But the question is, isn't this a funny place? There's so many places where the Torah describes crying, you know, where Rachel is crying for her children or all kinds of... We have to learn about crying from this mother of Sisro? Like, that's the famous question. And there are a few different answers. Some people say that Rosh Hashanah is a time of life and death. Nobody knows what the coming year holds. And she also, at this moment, she knew things were either very bad or very good. And she was crying. And so that describes the mood on Rosh Hashanah, where things can be very bad or they can be very good. It's a kind of crying from not knowing, where a person's fate... other people say was that her advisors were trying to tell her, it's really good, don't worry, I'm sure if he's taking so long, he must have a lot of booty, and she knew it wasn't true. Rosh Hashanah is a time of truth, where the rest of the year we sometimes fool ourselves and we pat ourselves on the back and we say, oh, we're doing everything great and everything is fine, and then they blow the shofar, and then all of a sudden you cry, a person cries because they realize, you know, maybe it's not so true. And I know in my heart it's not all so true. And that could also be why this is chosen. But it's one of the more interesting puzzles as to why the word crying is the word that is used by the shofar, why they learn it out from here. But at the end, she finishes off with the song, so too may the enemies of Hashem and the enemies of the Jewish people also pass. And but Hashem's beloved ones, people like Yael, people like Devorah, they are beloved like the rising sun. Which is a very interesting expression. With the sun, we need the sun for warmth and protection. And it's a beautiful song, and it's a very deep message.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.